5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to Tech Talk. It's me, Stephen Scott, back with you again this week, along with Robin Christofferson for the ride. Hello, Robin.
Hello, Stephen.
Tim Schwartz is here. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin.
And Emails Andy's here.
Hello, everyone. How are we all doing?
Well, we're all right. How are you? Because we know you weren't really supposed to be here. We'd planned the show without you being here.
Yeah.
And then you decided to turn up. So what happened?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a working boiler at the moment. So I'm currently wearing two pairs of socks. I've got four layers on my top half. And I miss hot showers. But these things happen. But I'm here. This is the main thing. I'm here to keep law and order amongst you.
And to be fair, the listeners probably think we never plan for you to be here, considering how many emails we usually get to.
That's very true. Yeah, very true.
I think we should say, for the record, that he's got something in between the socks and the tops. He just didn't mention.
Feet?
Yeah, I'm not sitting here with no trousers on. It's not that kind of show, is it?
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Just mention the socks.
You are fully clothed.
Yeah. I'm glad we clarified that. I didn't realise we had to, but...
We've got enough emails.
Andy
already
is indeed wearing clothes.
I'm wearing trousers.
Excellent. Yes. Yes, well, I'm so sad to hear about the boiler news. Of course, as you know, this could always be worse. It could have happened to me, and it didn't. So we're all good. Anyway, let me bring in our special guest this week. You know, we're so compassionate here on Tech Talk, as you know. We've got a special guest with us this week, if I could say it. I've had two coffees so far today, guys, and I don't think it's working. I don't think they're working for me. I'm going to bring in a guy who, you know, he's been on the show before. He was on for quite a long time. I mean, longer than I wanted, but he was here every week, turned up on time. And we've brought him back for a special week because there is a reason to bring him back. Not just because. What am I talking about? Here's Sean Preece. Terrible introduction.
Definitely done.
I was going to say, it's so good to be back. But after that intro and Andy's trousers, I'm not entirely sure.
Sean, remember the couple of times I've hosted here and elsewhere, the introductions I gave you? Just saying for the record.
I know. Beautiful, Tim.
Yes. Well, I was planning a big intro, but in fairness, then I got to writing the actual meat of the show and I kind of forgot all about you.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's the way it goes. But no, we are you are back this week for a very special purpose because we're going to talk about screen readers today. And this is kind of off the back of a few conversations we've all had as a group together. And I just want to get into, you know, what we think is good. If you're starting out today in 2021 with a screen reader, what should you look for? What should you be going for? You know, is JAWS the answer to everything? I guess is the ultimate question. HAL. Yeah, we all want HAL. Yeah, we're going to get into a bit of that a bit later. Also, just before we get into all that, though, a couple of things to tidy up from last week. First of all, I mentioned the Finty keyboard last week that was referred to by Rod Karn in an email to me. I bought one. It's so good. It's not a keyboard, I should say. It's a keyboard case.
StephenKeyboards.com.
Yeah. I know. I'm a bit obsessed with keyboards, but I love this because I didn't realize. I thought you just sat the magic keyboard inside it and it just kind of held on to it. You know, sometimes you get those keyboard cases where they have the little bits of material that just kind of wrap around the keyboard or wrap around the case or whatever.
Nope.
This one,
fine.
This doesn't have that. Thank goodness this doesn't have this. The Magic Keyboard version 2 that I've got, and I noticed that when I was buying it, you could buy one for either the original Magic Keyboard or the Magic Keyboard 2. This one, obviously, for the 2. It snaps into place beautifully. It's got these two little flaps that come over and go underneath to magnetically shut it over, which is nice. And then when you open that up, those two flaps actually come together and magnetize. And then when it falls back, it creates a stand out of the lid. So you get a stand for your iPhone or your iPad. Rod, a fantastic suggestion. And the funny thing is, I was just about to go and buy it. I think I'd put it in my basket, actually. And then Rod emailed me to say, oh, Amazon have knocked a tenner off the price. And I was like, right, buy now, buy now. And that's what did it. So Rod knows me well. But yeah, thanks for that, Rod. Fantastic. Finti keyboard case for the Magic Keyboards. F-I-N-T-I-E, if you want to know more about that. We also got some comments from last week following on from my microwave demo, Andy.
Yes, so the first one here from Nadia. Hi guys, hope you're all well. Really looking forward to Stephen's demonstration of the new microwave, as I've been considering getting one at some point. And then Shazad in Birmingham, could you please do a detailed demonstration of the RNIB talking microwave, as you only gave a teaser last week.
Mm-hmm. I did a bit, didn't I? It was a bit of a tease, really, as to how it works. Truthfully,
you
it's a
flooded,
fantastic
though,
microwave.
To be fair.
What?
You were flooded out.
Well, I
fair.
Was flooded,
you know,
out, yes.
There's only so much professionalism, you know, we can expect from
Stephen. You could just end that
like
sentence there, and that could apply to anything, really, couldn't it?
So wait, yeah, what does the level of water on the floor have to do with this? I'm confused.
Underwater, you could expect the same level of professionalism, I think. But no, this week I have actually taken some time out with the microwave and gone a bit in-depth with it, so you can listen to that a bit later. I do promise you a full review of the RNIB microwave, which I've got to say I'm really impressed by. So we'll get into that a bit later and you'll find out why. Also some pickups from last week, Andy, on Dee Norman's comments on the show regarding computers versus PC.
Yes, also on the topic, this is also a continuation from Shazad's email, on the topic of whether using a computer or a smartphone device in doing online shopping and online banking, I feel that using the desktop computer is more easy to navigate rather than on a smartphone, as most smartphone devices are geared towards right-handed users and not for left-handed users, as that could be a deterrent for any blind person in tipping their or dipping their toes into the smartphone revolution.
Don't tip your toes.
Tipping your toes. I feel that most blind users would be happy to have a smartphone if it is controlled by their voice rather than using gestures, as I was impressed with Robin's demonstration of the Louis voice application that will be on an Android device. And then Shazad ends by saying, I hope that Stephen can be more careful in the kitchen when it comes to using butter when he's making food for himself in the future.
Well, I appreciate the concern regarding that, Shazad, but yes, I can't promise anything. And when I tell
the concern is because you have butter all over your house.
Well,
as
yes,
you said.
I know. Light switches. Where did I find it today? I think I found it on the back of an iPad today, which was rather concerning.
What have I come back to? This is ridiculous. Butter basted Stephen.
I have the same problem with dog hair. He's not allowed upstairs. He never comes upstairs, but I'm brushing them off my desk as we speak. I don't
off
know
your
what's going
desk?
On. Yeah.
Wow.
You're shedding, Robin.
Yeah, there's something.
It's you.
Butter and hair.
Yeah, I think butter's
it's called
a bit
male
more
pattern
concerning.
Baldness. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Okay, I want to get into a couple of other emails just before we get into the discussion on screen readers. You know, I've just realised, you know what I haven't done? We're reading these emails out, and you know what I haven't done?
I was thinking this.
Yeah, I haven't done this.
You're all backwards.
Oh, shocking.
Email. Oh, we get email.
There we go.
I've
missed this. That enough? Is that enough?
No, no. Oh.
You want
no,
more?
We need the doorbell.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
This is just for Sean Priest.
Ding dong.
Here's your mail today.
The only reason I came back.
Right, you happy now? Okay.
Thank you.
I'm not happy because I want to ask about why Shazad thinks that, you know, what's the issue with left-handed? I need to know that because we'll get emails otherwise and we've got a big enough problem with emails as it is.
Well, and you can set the keyboard to a left-handed layout. So I don't know about Android, but I know on iPhone, you can set a left-handed layout. So like the search button and all that kind of thing is on the left side instead of the right.
It's not something I've ever thought about, to be honest.
No, neither have
I. I didn't want to let that one go.
I noticed. Right, let's go on. Yeah, go for Will.
So are we all, is everyone in here currently right-handed then? Is that?
I'm left-handed, but.
I am.
You know, it depends. You know, I use a mouse with my right hand occasionally. I don't write very often. Anyway, I know this isn't really answering anyone's questions, but, you know, it's not something I've ever thought about. But look, we've got so much to get through. I don't want to start. This is what happens. We end up right down a rabbit hole and we can't get out again. And this
Robbie
is Sean Priest's fault.
I didn't say a word.
It's just easier when you're around. I can just blame you for everything. Right, fair let's
enough
get an email from Will.
Old times.
Yes, this is Will. Can someone please explain the difference between Clubhouse and Discord?
Nope.
I would check it out if someone would be so kind to send me an invite. Your answer to this question, the best biscuit disappointed meal, I know it comes down to personal preference, but unless you said either party rings, chocolate digestives, custard creams, or those pink marshmallow type ones, then you're wrong, in my opinion, says Will. When it comes to these computers versus smartphones...
Hang on, I don't mind all that. Let's get to this biscuit question.
Right, okay.
You know, chocolate digestives, custard creams, pink marshmallow. Mm. Is that like those pink wafery
tea
things?
Cakes. No, the big domey ones.
They're not pink, are they?
They're inside chocolate tea cake things.
Yeah, but that's a tea cake, and you can get like pink wafers.
Awful for children. No. If it's not a Viscount, you know the ones covered in foil, the posh biscuits. Then
yo-yos. What about yo-yos?
Yo-yos, same thing. Yeah.
I'd like to say that caramel chocolate digestives with a bit of caramel underneath the chocolate. That's an evolution.
That's just a sweet. That's a dessert. Oh. Almost. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You're taking the mick now. Bourbon creams are the answer to everything. I'm sorry, Will. You're wrong.
I'm still stuck on the fact that the colorblind guy is the one asking if it's pink or not.
Well, it might well. I actually have no idea. I thought it was chocolate. So it would be, yeah. Anyway. What's he saying about computers and smartphones, Andy?
Yeah, when it comes to computers versus smartphones and which one I use, it depends on what I need to do. Internet banking, browsing social media, listening to podcasts and audiobooks, all easier on the phone. WhatsApp provides a web interface so that I can look at it on the laptop.
Terrible.
Which I will sometimes use because the iPhone on screen keyboard drives me insane.
Mm-hmm. Get a
shopping
keyboard.
Can be done. Yeah, that's a good solution. And you can get a case as well.
Get your Finty.
Shopping can be easier on the laptop, mainly because of the bigger screen, depending on what I'm buying. Using the phone to buy groceries or something where I know what I'm going to be buying is fine. I don't really need to be able to see a picture of what I'm getting. If, however, buying something new, like a TV, laptop, phone, camera, or some audio equipment, then I like to do that on the computer because I can compare them side by side, read the reviews, and then decide which one best fits my need. Many thanks. That's from Will.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because if you've got some vision like I have, you try and use it. So whenever I'm buying something, I do try and look at the image. And often the disaster comes, and this is, I think, the problem with a lot of partially sighted people. Tell me if I'm wrong here, Sean, from your point of view on this, because I know you and I both do this. You look at something and you might use VoiceOver to get to the description of it, but you're not really paying the attention perhaps you should. So therefore,
the amount of stuff I bought, which I was expecting something completely different.
Or you get like 12 of the same thing. You know, it's like 12 packs. And my favourite is buying bottled water because I can never tell what the size of the bottle is. And you get like the 330ml, which is like the kiddie style bottle of water. You know, it's tiny. You get 300
of them.
1,000 litres,
yes.
That's right, yeah. Can't even fit in the fridge.
Isn't it just down to the app, though, isn't it? I'm looking at something like the Amazon app, right? Great on the phone, really easy to go through and browse through. The website, I'm not so keen on. It seems more clunky to navigate using a screen reader.
Yeah, at the same token, I've seen people say the opposite online. I've seen people say, I don't touch the iPhone app. It's gone downhill. In terms of accessibility, the app on the website is much easier. So, yeah, it's. I think it depends on so many different factors. Screen reader versus what vision you have. You know, if you're using Zoom on the screen, if you're using magnification.
Yeah.
You know, I think it depends on where you are, and that's the point, right? There's no one solution to everybody. I'll admit, I am probably using I mentioned this last week, I'm using my phone more because I've got the keyboard added. I feel it just gives me so much more functionality on that phone. I can navigate websites so much easier. Microsoft Edge, by the way, I am loving.
Told you.
Even on the Mac. Yeah. You know what I love about it on the Mac? You know that problem, Robin, we always have where, you know, you're trying to navigate something on the web with Safari and Focus will always throw you out of the actual website and kind of around the program. You're kind of stuck outside.
All Mac apps are terrible for taking your focus to places you didn't want to go.
Not with Edge. I mean, it'll do it, I guess, at some point. It will do it. But the difference is that it's the same as on the PC as it is on the Mac. You can shift F6 and F6 your way back into the app, which is really cool. So, that's fantastic. So I think it is dependent on so many different factors. But thanks for your comments. We'll really appreciate them. And that leads us nicely into this subject.
Well,
of
there was
readers.
Another question.
I was just going to say there was a question at the beginning that we haven't covered.
He wanted to know the difference... Tim. Yeah, we want to know the difference between Clubhouse and Discord.
Who knows? Who cares?
Well, I know.
Okay.
That's why I was going to bring it up. I know we're going to talk more about...
We are going to talk about Clubhouse later, so we could maybe hold it back to then, if that's okay, because I want to go on to the subject of screen readers. Keep that in mind, though. Someone write it down, Andy. You're the one who can, you know, see. Write it down. As you told. Okay, so look, let's get into screen readers, because it's a nice segue point from shopping. Sean, we brought you on this week because you're an NVDA guy, and we get a lot of people emailing in saying, you know, guys, you never mention NVDA, you never talk about it. That's probably because we've got Sean here. So we thought, let's get you back on. So I want you to stand up for NVDA a little bit and talk a bit about why you chose that as your screen reader versus the other options you've had, because you've had JAWS.
Yes.
You've had, obviously, the option of Narrator. You've got a Mac. You could have used VoiceOver.
VoiceOver on the Mac. So, yes. Dolphin.
Why NVDA? Yes.
Because it's free. Thank you. See you next week.
Right. All the best. That was easy. So what's Clubhouse got to do with Discord?
No. Listen, NVDA, I am passionate about NVDA. And every time I do talk about NVDA, I'm not saying at all that JAWS is terrible or worse or anything like that. I'm talking specifically about NVDA. It changed everything for us because it was the first free screen reader. I know I've got this image of being cheap, and it's absolutely correct, but it meant that it was truly accessible to everyone. JAWS was great, and that also was a game changer back in the day. It meant we could access computers, it meant we could get employment, but there was that price point. And yes, you have the 40-minute mode, which I lived on for years. Fantastic. But I didn't agree with the price point. I didn't agree with the software maintenance agreements. I didn't think that was a great business plan. NVDA, for me, it made computers and tech truly accessible for the visually impaired. I think those guys deserve a Nobel Prize. And I'm not exaggerating there. I think it's fantastic, and I think it changed accessibility for so many people. It's amazing. There.
Okay.
I think you'd also want to kind of clarify, though, that it's not a second best choice either. It's not a compromise, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. No. I mean, look, there's no getting away. I don't know if you guys have ever talked about Android versus iPhone before on the show.
No, it's never come up, no.
Never.
But look, NVDA is not as mature and really doesn't have, I would say, the resources that are available for Freedom Scientific and JAWS. And JAWS has a decades a lead on this. But NVDA, for me, does absolutely everything, and I prefer it, and I know lots of people that actually prefer it to JAWS. Now, again, I'm not trying to put down JAWS or any other. There's so many out there. Well, there's not so many, but, you know, we do have choices. But NVDA for me is all I ever need, and I just love it. It works so well.
Okay. I mean, I hear you, and I
Well, there's a bit of a stunned silence. No, I don't like this. No, come on. What? What have I said there that's wrong?
Nothing at all. In fact, and I think the key thing I would say is let's not start the comparison thing, because first off, you've got to pay for JAWS. And I think that, you know, one thing that stands out for me is that JAWS is very much what it says in the name. It's for workplaces, I think. I think if you're going into the job market, I think JAWS is something you should have. And oftentimes it's the only option you'll get, because companies won't be too keen on going down the NVDA route because it is open source, because they don't have a place to be able to claim. We've had this conversation before on the show about this. You know,
support.
Yeah, they don't have the ability to, if something goes horribly wrong, they don't have somebody to claim against. So
but they do. They do have a support now for enterprise NVDA people. So I think, look, it's really difficult not to get into comparisons. You know, everyone does get into comparisons.
The reason I'm saying that, though, is because we've got to be very careful. I get into so much trouble around this topic. I mean, I get in trouble anytime I seem to open my mouth these days. But, you know, around this particular topic, I get in trouble. And actually, most recently from my wife, who got a bit... It irked by the fact that I was suggesting, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Narrator in a moment, you know, how I was feeling about Narrator. And she said, look, you've got to be really careful here because, and other people have said this to me as well, if employers get the idea that we can just switch to a free solution and that JAWS is no longer useful or is needed, then we're in a situation where people could lose out. And I think what we have to be clear on, I think, is that JAWS is, and Robin, Tim, you guys have worked with JAWS professionally. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but to me, that's JAWS is the pro solution. It's the employment solution, and we need to keep that message going?
I had some stats lined up for a few weeks ago. We had this same question coming up, and, you know, why is, you know, what's so pro about Jaws? And, you know, if you go into the scripts, which are those extra bits of intelligence which can, you know, monitor different parts of the screen automatically, allow you to read out different parts of the screen with hotkeys, that sort of thing, analyze, you know, what cell you're in and automatically read the formula without having to go up to the formula bar and stuff like that. And in Word, for example, there were something like 172 scripts that were associated with Word alone, which are extra things that you that either happen automatically or that you can do with a hotkey. So, you know, there's an awful lot of extra mile that's taken by the, you know, the screen reader for you. And I think that can help in a pro situation where productivity is absolutely key, but you pay for it.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And the other thing to consider is you were mentioning narrators, Stephen. Microsoft has said that they will eventually be supporting scripting for narrator. So that is a pro, but it could also be the con because, yeah, Jaws, I used it for over 10 years working for the government in a professional way, and it's what I know. Now, at the same time, I was using narrator at home, and I loved it. I absolutely love narrator. It's great. Or wait, I said that wrong. I used NVDA at home. Sorry. I started using
narrator.
I was
quite surprised when you were saying that.
I know. Yeah, like, not 10 years ago. Sorry, no, Microsoft. 10 years ago, no narrator. That's what I used to download NVDA, quite honestly. But then, you know, after a while, I did start using narrator more as they got the update here in the last year or two. And it's nicer. And if they do add scripting ability to it, and yes, we're going to start seeing, you know, companies, you know, corporations and things saying, well, we can work with Microsoft and it's free. It's built in. So why do you need this Jaws? And there is that argument, like Robin was saying, that it's not just the scripting. It's the support. It's that history. Not saying that narrator can't get there, that NVDA isn't there. But I don't know, there's just something about the professional uses for work with Jaws. But I think they're all pretty comparable now. I mean, no, narrator is not quite there, but it's very close. NVDA, once you get the right voice going, because I always hated the default voice.
Yeah, sort of.
But, you know, spend 50 quid and get Eloquence or whatever else. You know, but it's a one-time purchase, you know, and you know, set it up the way you want to. So, you know, I don't know. I agree, though. I think that if you're looking at a professional workplace situation, Jaws is it, because when I worked for the government, we had
Sean, though, just to kind of come in there, Sean, I mean, you're a professional. No, not at all. But I mean, if we're talking professional, I mean, Sean is a professional. He gets paid to edit audio,
Sorry.
I totally agree. But what I was going to ask Sean was, you know, what do you do on your computer, and that narrator, I mean, NVDA, well, really supports
you. This is back to my key question. So what I'm asking today is, what's the best screen reader for someone starting out today as a home user? Not maybe as a employment is a different issue. And I would still
say... That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, yes. And my view would be Jaws is the answer to that in employment. I think that companies would still want that. I think, you know, the problem is that the options are, in an employment situation, narrator or Jaws. And I don't think narrator's at that level that you would be prepared to throw someone to narrator and say, this is it, this is your choice. And I know some companies that have already started looking at this because they see this screen reader software developing. They're hearing people like us say, hey, this is getting better. And the problem is, if they then turn around and say, and this is the employers I'm talking about, say, well, if it's that good, then why am I paying all this money for this Jaws software? We actually could be hurting some blind people in their jobs. And that's my fear.
Why, though? I heard argument before.
If you're in science...
Because narrator doesn't do everything that Jaws can.
Yeah, if you work in science, or you work around mathematics, or you work with big spreadsheets, or you do all that kind of work, accountancy, or you're a lawyer, I don't think narrator's going to cut it for you in any way. You need all this extra scripting for these programs that are required. Sometimes you need specialist scripting that could only be done so far for Jaws.
Absolutely right. Okay, Jaws is great, and Enterprise are infamous for using bespoke software or older software. Jaws comes into its own when it comes to that. But that isn't the point. Why we're saying that, oh, well, if we say, you know, we can use Narrator, then companies are going to say, well, I'm never going to pay for Jaws again. It comes down to people need to listen to the user. You know, I need to use Jaws because it's not a case of, which we've had for years, of, oh, you need a screen reader? Well, then that's Jaws. You know, companies and even Access to Work and people like that need to listen to what we like. If you're using Narrator at home, there is absolutely no reason, unless it is because of specialist software that isn't accessible via Narrator, that you shouldn't be able to use that.
Can I be honest? Yes. I have gone through so many Access to Work applications in my life. They don't listen to us.
Exactly. And if they're not going to listen to us, then the government, you know, funding isn't going to listen to us, and a business and enterprise isn't going to listen to us either.
Well, this is the problem, right? Because my people used to ask me, why did I use ZoomText years and years ago? And the key reason I used ZoomText was because that's what was told. I was told I should have. Now, at school, I had seen Supernova for the first time, and I thought it was brilliant. I really liked Supernova.
Yep.
And then I get into employment years later, and they said, right, there's this thing called ZoomText. You'll love it. You'll love it. And I was like, okay. And then suddenly I get, you know, given ZoomText. Now, it wasn't bad. It was fine. It was good software and really good. But I just always wondered, why wasn't I offered Supernova? Now, the challenge here is, it's great for people like us to sit here and say, well, you know, there are all these options and you should, you know what they are and you should be aware of them and you should tell people what you want. But the problem is, going into it, I didn't really know what the options were. And that's the problem. And I think a lot of this starts with the companies who are charged with the responsibility, especially around Access to Work applications, who come out with an agenda. And I'm sorry, but they do. They come out with
absolutely
an agenda.
Right.
They come out and say, maybe, and I don't know how that comes or forms, whether it's just knowledge or whether it's that the companies make money off the back of other companies paying them to promote specific products. I don't know how it works. But what I do know is that I am given very little choice. And it's proven more times than not when it's a certain company who comes out that only makes certain products telling you to buy that product. And you're thinking, well, hang on. And when asked the question, as I did in my recent one, well, what about this product? And there was a kind of a, oh, well, you won't want one of those. I mean, why would you want that?
I think that's closer to the truth. Either they've only got a set of products to actually recommend from, which isn't good practice, or the Access to Work assessor has ones that they know better than others. And they might have favourites because they might think, well, actually, or they might know that ZoomText is slightly more functional than Supernova. I don't know if it is, but, you know, they might know something about it and genuinely think they're doing you a favour. But, I mean, choice is about, I think Sean said, it's about the user, listening to the end user. So whilst I'm wary that we're going to put out any kind of message that means that employers can say, well, look, you know, NVDA or Narrator are good enough. At the same time, I would like to hear from listeners who are using, for example, NVDA in the workplace.
Well, let's get back to that point, because we've drifted on, you know, to employment, but let's actually get back to the question.
Let's get back to that point that I was trying to make about 5 minutes ago.
Well, go for it, Tim.
Jaws versus NVDA.
Sorry, Tim.
Yes. Yes. Thanks, Robin.
Ooh,
again, thank you for incorrecting me. So, but that's the point. What you were trying to say, Robin, and I agree with you, is
interrupted,
that
so sorry.
NVDA can be enough. Like John was saying, it does have an enterprise solution, but it is up to us as users to convince companies, hey, you know what? I could save you some money. You could use NVDA because it is good enough. Like we were saying, Narrator right now, it's growing. It's getting better. If and when they do truly add scripting, which again, they've said they will, we'll see. We'll see if Narrator catches up and can do that. But right now, it's not viable enough. And don't even get me started on what VoiceOver is on the Mac. I know you Mac guys, on the phone, fine. On the actual Mac itself, not so much.
Hey, listen, I'm getting there with you on that one. I'm starting to wonder what's going on with VoiceOver on the Mac side.
So, but NVDA, though, as I said before, I was using Jaws in a professional way, working for the government. And that was what was offered, and that's what I was trained on. And I used it for over 10 years, and it's fantastic. It's a wonderful program for what I needed. And they had a specific team that did specific scripting for some of the applications that we used internally for the government.
Sorry, Tim, for interrupting, but You mean Jaws, because you said NVDA.
Oh, for God's sake!
Jaws
yes.
at work, yes.
I got to quit this. Yes, Jaws. Got them all in my brain. I'm all so confused. But yes, thank you, Sean. Yeah, using Jaws at work for all that period of time. And they had specific scripts for things that we use that nobody else is using because they're very specific government applications that Jaws needed scripting for.
Top secret.
But that's not to say that we couldn't have had it done by
software.
No, but it's not to say that we couldn't have done it with NVDA. And for example, the things that all of us do here, and Sean is so amazing and professional at, he should be being paid, you know, six figures for what he can do.
Careful.
You know, editing audio.
not that, the other thing.
Editing audio and doing things that we do and making it sound professional can be done with NVDA very well is the point.
Let me drag this back to the point that I've been trying to make for half an hour, which is at home, not at work. That's what I'm saying.
No, at home, the things that we are all doing at home, NVDA is fine.
Which we are doing, and that's the point, right? So we are doing a lot more stuff, I think, at home than most people are, especially around audio editing and all that. I don't think most people are doing all that. Most people are browsing the web, they're doing the basic stuff, going online, doing the things that we've heard about from other listeners today as well. And I just wonder, you know, is narrator enough for that? So forget employment, forget that. So don't email in about that because I'm not interested. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about home users at home. Narrator, I've been using now for 2 weeks. A little bit longer than that, in fairness, over time. But I've really got into it in the last couple of weeks, primarily because on my new PC I got, I didn't have a screen reader on it at that point. And, you know, I did the usual, well, I'll just go off and download Jaws, but I didn't. I stuck with Narrator because, first off, it was very responsive, very fast, pretty much did everything. I love scan mode. I mean, scan mode, to me, is what Quick Nav could be on the Mac. It's very good, and it just easily lets you navigate around. I love how scan mode works better, I think, with the system, much better than it does on the Mac, and I'd say even better than Jaws does in Forms mode. You know, it just very quickly kind of gets you around the screen. If you go into an edit box, it immediately turns it off and just has it waiting for you to do what you need to do. You can easily navigate websites. I find navigating the web with Narrator on Edge especially so much better. And I think for the basic stuff I do, even just for research, even just for emails, even for, you know, the odd bit of web browsing, shopping or whatever, and email, obviously, that all that is very simple to do. And I couldn't argue that I'd need anything more than Narrator. And I think that's really interesting. And I would say, I might get myself in trouble for this one. I'll find out when I get the email inbox, have a look in next week. I would say that Narrator is almost, not quite, I'd say 70% up there with VoiceOver on the Mac.
I can't disagree with that.
I say that because there's still a little bit of gap. There's still a little bit of a gap.
A little bit.
But it's not, I mean, in terms of usability, it's usable. That's the key point. Usable, gets you through the system. I think Windows has improved as well, which is a coupling thing going on here. Narrator's getting better, but Windows is getting better with it. That's the key point. So the two are working well. I mean, Microsoft Edge, as I said earlier, is a fantastic browser. I've switched to that now. I'm not using Chrome. I'm not using Safari, even on the Mac. I love Microsoft Edge and the Immersive Reader and the Read Aloud. And Bing is, well, it's usable, right? I mean, it does the gig. I haven't switched it yet. I will switch it to Google
much
at some point.
Much to Bill Gates' chagrin, I have switched my default browser to Google from Bing, but I do use Edge on my iPhone, and it's fantastic there, too. So, no, I agree with you. I think that Narrator is getting very, very close.
Yeah. Well, look, Narrator actually turns 21, and I have to say, in some respects, a bit of an immature 21, but, you know, thankfully it's growing up now. You can read all about this. Robin has written a fantastic article on AbilityNet's website. I want to point people to. We'll maybe tweet that out, Andy, on our at RNIB Radio Twitter feed.
Because
this I didn't say that.
No, he didn't, because I read this. What I love about this, and actually I'd love to get into this in more depth, maybe we will at some point, but looking back at the history of screen readers, I was reminded as part of this, reading this article, and then a conversation I ended up on Clubhouse, of all places, was Outspoken, the very first screen reader on the Mac, or at least that's the one that's claimed to be the first one. I think there might have been something before that, but Outspoken is the one. And so as soon as you hear a word, isn't it? It's like when you hear a word from your past, podcast. You're just like, oh my God, this takes me right back. I do remember Outspoken, actually. So, yeah, and there was the whole story around the gap between Outspoken being closed down, essentially, and VoiceOver, which I think was Spoken Access initially. Then it became officially VoiceOver on the Mac. There was a bit of a gap there as well, so people were left with nothing. So, you know, it's funny, I complain about VoiceOver sometimes, and you get the people who've been using it since, you know, the mid-90s who say, you think you've got problems now?
You kids today don't know you're born.
10, 20 years ago. It was unbelievably awful. Okay. Thank you, Sean. Stick around, though. We're going to get into more conversation later. For now, though, I am going to talk about a microwave. Yes, the RNIB microwave, in fact. Lots of you, I know, are keen on getting a bit more detail on how this thing works. So I decided this week to review it just for you lovely people. Okay, so I'm back here in my kitchen, and less of a rushed review this time on the new RNIB microwave. So I've got it here, and it's a pretty solid unit, like the Cobalt and most other talking microwaves before it. Another solid unit, but I would say a little bit smaller in terms of footprint, probably 2 or 3 inches off the back, and certainly about 2 or 3, maybe even 4 inches off the side, making it just a little bit narrower and a little bit smaller footprint on my worktop, which is really nice, actually. The Cobalt microwave did stick out quite a bit, almost to the edge of my worktop. This one goes back a little bit, and it just keeps it off the worktop, which I kind of like, just, or keeps, I should say, more further back onto the worktop, but away from, you know, me when I tend to, you know, bump my way along the worktop to try and find the edge. I'd rather find the edge and not the buttons of the microwave. So I'm going to switch it on because you can hear how it starts up.
Power on.
So nice and simple. Power on lets you know I've switched on the power. That's the plug in the socket. I've just turned it on at the wall and it's on. On the front of the microwave at the right-hand side, there is a display. And this was a bit controversial when it was announced because a lot of blind people thought, well, what's the point in that? But then a good point was made to me from the team at RNIB who sell this. You know, a lot of us do have sighted partners. We have people in our house who have got some vision, and you might just want to be able to glance at a display. So this is really useful. So there is a display there. I will admit, it's a bit small. I think there's a kind of a large number for the minutes and a smaller set for the seconds. I don't know why they're not the same size, but they're just a little bit different. So it means that you probably might be able to see the minutes on it, but not the seconds. Interesting. Below that, as you move down, as I mentioned last time, there are 3 buttons. Now, this time I know what they all are. So the first button has a single tactile mark on it, and that's for minutes. It's marked as M. Below that, there's a button with 2 dots on it. That's for seconds. So that's good. And then below that, there is the P button, and that is the program button. Then below that, you've got a knob which turns, and if I turn the outer ring of the knob,
volume 9, volume 10,
you'll hear the volume increases, the volume of the voice of the microwave. And interestingly, you might think you don't want the volume too high. You'll probably be tempted to turn it down a little bit, especially if you've had the Cobalt microwave, and the temptation's always to turn the volume down a bit. But when this thing gets started, it is pretty loud. So having the ability to turn up that voice can be useful. And we'll get into why that's even more important in a moment. Inside where the knob is, where you actually put your hand on the knob, the turning knob for the volume, in the middle of that, there's a button. And that's your start-stop button. So if you want to start, you just push that in. If you want to stop, you hold it in, and it will end the program on the microwave. So I've got my cup of water here. I didn't bother putting any food in. I've already eaten, actually, so I'm not going to eat any more at the moment, although that is tempting. No beans in sight, no eggs, nothing. It's just a simple cup of water. When you open it, you get the standard door open, but also something else. Beware hot contents. It's telling you to beware hot contents, which is another interesting addition, considering at the moment there's nothing in it. What would be kind of nice is if it had maybe a weight sensor in here that it would actually know if there was food in the microwave. That would actually be useful, even just to know food was inside, because I've gone into the microwave sometimes and something's already in there that's either been forgotten about, or sometimes we put the little microwavable trays, we put them in and we, you know, use them and just store them in there. But in this case, I'm going in, No, there's definitely nothing in there, so that's fine. Right, I'm going to take this cup of water. I'm just going to place it inside. Into the middle, there we go. And I'm going to close the door. It's not, I mean, in terms of size, I would say a standard plate will fit in here, no problem. I'm trying to think how big this plate is. I mean, it's a fairly sizable plate. The plate does run right up to the edge of the microwave, as you would expect. So, you know, once you feel this plate, I imagine most dinner plates will be the size of this. But I think I've got square plates that are pretty sizable. I mean, they're the size on the actual plate itself. It's fairly normal size because they have that dip going into it. But the actual size of the plate is pretty big. I don't know if that would fit in here. It's maybe just a bit too big. It might not get the turn. So regular large dinner plates that are circular will be fine. Anything else, I'm not so sure. Okay, so let's close the door. So you get your door closed message. And then what you would do is most times I would just go straight to the minutes and just start tapping away at minutes, but that doesn't work here. You've got to choose the program first. So I go down to the third button, the one with no markings on it.
Low.
So that's a low setting.
Defrost.
So it's a defrost setting. And again, all I'm doing is just pressing
press start to begin, or press and hold start for 3 seconds to cancel.
Okay, so it's telling me to do that. I guess it might be a pre-programmed setting. I don't want to do that, though. I want to actually heat this up. So I'll keep pressing the P button.
Medium. Medium high. High.
Okay, and now I can select my minutes. So I can go to the M at the top button, and just start pressing it. Now, when you press it at first, you'll think nothing's happening, but it's actually bringing up zero on the display.
Press start to begin.
So I'll go for, let's say, 2 minutes on this one. I'll say 2 minutes 30. So I'll press the M button one more time.
2 minutes.
And I'll press the S button.
2 minutes, 10 seconds. 2 minutes, 20 seconds.
Okay, so it's going up in tens.
2 minutes, 30 seconds.
So I'm now going to go down to the fourth, what is actually the rotating knob, but
press
the button
start
in the middle. Okay, so we don't want to cancel, we want to start, so we're just going to press the start.
2 minutes, 30 seconds.
Now, what you might notice is it has already started to get loud, so you can turn up that volume.
Volume 11, volume 12, volume 13, volume 15.
I didn't want to leave it on 13, it's... I'm superstitious. Now, one thing I want to show you here is something that the Cobalt doesn't do. There is an option to do it on the Cobalt, but... I like the fact that this automatically does it, and it's going to do it, I think, around now.
2 minutes.
It starts counting down every minute, and when it gets to zero, it will actually count down from 1 minute, 50 seconds, 40 seconds. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cancel this, holding in stop.
Cancelled.
So that's the button at the very, very bottom, which is just on the outside of the knob. So where the knob is... the button, you can feel it, and you just hold that in for 3 seconds. I'm going to do a 30 second just to show you how this works.
Low.
So I'll press my program button again.
Defrost, medium, medium high, high.
So we'll say high, and I'll say 30 seconds, so I go to the S with the two tactile marks. Okay, the first button doesn't,
seconds.
First press doesn't do anything. So let's say 30.
30 seconds.
And I'll hit start.
30 seconds.
Okay, so it's counting down.
20 seconds.
So you're getting every 10 seconds that update of where the microwave is.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Time completed.
And that's it. Done. Now, interestingly, when I did that before, I got a ding. Didn't get a ding this time. But that's it. It's done. And it's made my water nice and warm.
14.
Sorry, I just grazed that button.
Hot contents.
Now, this time it's right. There are hot contents in here. Nice warm cup. Oh, I can feel it, yeah. Nice warm cup of water, which we'll just pour away down the sink. Okay, that's that done. So I'll just put that cup out of the way. And that's it. So I'll just close the door.
Closed.
And we'll turn it off at the wall. And that's the RNIB Talking Microwave. It's a simple microwave in a lot of ways. The Cobalt obviously has a lot more function to it. I think for most of us, this is more than enough. I love that program function. I love the fact I've never been able to use defrost in a microwave because I've never really understood how it works. I just love how that works. I just go to defrost, I choose my time, it even has pre-programmed settings, and that's it. I'm defrosting, and then I'm cooking my meal. This is a microwave I'll probably use all these functions of, whereas on the Cobalt, I just tended to ignore all the other buttons and just literally heat things up. And in some cases, not even know if I was on high or low or what temperature I was even on or what power level I was on. This, I know exactly what I'm doing. I think the voice is great. It's not too grating, which is good. The size, the footprint is brilliant as well. And that volume control, that really makes all the difference as well. If you want a sneaky snack at night and you don't want to wake the whole house up or indeed the entire street, then you can do that with this microwave. Available from RNIB, it's well worth checking out. And the build quality, great. Solid, really powerful. Yeah, I love it.
So there you go, that's my review of the RNIB microwave, which you can get from the RNIB store. You can get in touch with the RNIB helpline to order one, or you can go to rnib.org.uk/shop. You can also call, as I say, the helpline 0303 123 9999. Now, every week on the show, we try and catch up with the Technology for Life team. We haven't managed to get in touch with them for the last couple of weeks. That's been down to us, not anyone else. But we have got Mark Evans with us today, who is going to tell us all about some fantastic keystrokes that you can find out about to help you use your computer more easily, Mark.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for that introduction. Lovely as always. As I say, you are with myself, Mark Evans, today in RNIB's technology team. I get asked many questions, but one question I get asked a lot is, Mark, how can I improve my ability to use my computer? Well, a great way to do this is to understand what we call shortcuts or keystrokes. These are combinations on the keyboard that will help us and aid us do multitasks far quicker than using the mouse. Now, there's a fantastic website out there called shortcutworld.com. That's www.shortcutworld.com. But before I get into that, I'm going to talk about a couple of my favourite keystrokes. So, being able to highlight what we want on screen, Control and A. Being able to then copy what we've highlighted on screen, Control and C. Being able to then paste what we want, Control and V. Getting to the Windows desktop quickly, Windows key and D. These are just some of the ones that I use very, very regularly to help me in my work day to day. So if we go to www.shortcutworld.com, it has a huge variety of different shortcuts. There's a search box at the top, and we can look to bookmark pages and add references to those bookmarks very, very simply. So this covers shortcuts to things like Excel, Word, PowerPoint, Windows navigation, and also using the Mac and iOS as well. The great thing about these shortcuts is they are great keys and they are generic, so they will work with Narrator for Windows or Windows Narrator. They'll work with NVDA, that's Non-Visual Desktop Access Screen Reader. They'll work with JAWS, Job Access with Speech Screen Reader, as well as Apple's own VoiceOver Screen Reader on there. So they're compatible with all, and they are simple and easy to use. Moving through, we can choose, as I say, what we want. We can even look at shortcuts to use things like media players. And the very, very popular one is the VLC media player, a multimedia player people can use to listen to our talking books and magazines as well digitally. So it's all there for you. It's all free. Highly recommend you go and check that out and you practice. And if you practice for 5-10 minutes at a time or a day, it will help you build up your confidence with keystrokes. If you want further information, you can come back to us via calling the helpline 0303 123-9999, or you can email us. It's the letters T for Tommy, F for Freddie, L for Lima. So technology, that stands for Technology for Life. So TFL at rnib.org.uk. Thank you, and hopefully see you soon.
Thanks, Mark. And like he says, get in touch with the team. They are always willing to help. I must admit, guys, I had no idea about shortcutworld.com. Robin, Tim and Andy, of course. And Sean Priest with us as well this week on Tech Talk. Did you, have you heard of that? That was a new one to me.
I haven't tried that one out. But I'm forever finding new keyboard shortcuts I had no idea that make life so much easier. Yeah, the keyboard shortcuts are, like, we couldn't work without them.
And the thing is we often think, don't we, that, you know, it's, oh, well, maybe it's only screen reader specific. But it's not. These things, these particular shortcuts are universal.
Yep. Yeah, I visited it while that feature was on, and I'm looking at all the shortcuts for VLC. I didn't know most of these. So, yeah, real resource. Bookmark it, guys.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll be putting those to good use. I love VLC. I first found it on my iPhone and would use it to download different types of media when I was on, say, a long trip or going on an airplane where you have to, you know, turn off Wi-Fi and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, to be able to use extra things on my PC side, it's fantastic. So, yeah, definitely going to check out that website.
So this week on the show, we've got so much to get through on the program this week, and we just literally don't have the time to fit everything into the hour we have. But what we've done is we've put together a special episode of Tech Talk, a Geek Out special, where I sit down with Oliver Lemon from Heriot Watt University in Edinburgh and Robin Spinks from RNIB to discuss Alana AI. It's a spin-out company from the university, and they talk about how their new conversational AI could help RNIB deliver improved services in the future. In the conversation, I spoke to Oliver to find out if, you know, could a human potentially replace AI and be better at it? Here's what he had to say.
In some ways, it definitely can. And that's, you know, Alana, we're very excited about this collaboration because it gives us ways to explore when that can happen. So, for example, obviously AI is available 24/7. It doesn't get tired, it doesn't get bored, and it doesn't judge you. And there are already studies showing that, you know, for certain people, they prefer to talk to an AI rather than a human, particularly about sort of sensitive medical topics and that kind of thing. So it could be faster, can be more reliable. And there's definitely the potential to build conversational systems, which in some aspects are better than humans.
So you can hear more of that conversation with Oliver and Robin Spinks from RNIB on the Tech Talk podcast. If you're listening, check it out on Wednesday. That is when the extra podcast will appear. It will be called a Tech Talk Geek Out episode, focusing on RNIB and Alana AI's new partnership. A full story on the podcast this week as a little extra for you. We're so kind here at Tech Talk, aren't we? Okay, let's talk about BritBox. A lot of you have been in touch saying, you know, I've been on the app, isn't great, there's no audio described content. Well, the good news is that work is being done to make the app more usable, and also there has been some new audio described titles appearing. Amazing news. We get the latest on this from Jonathan Penny from ITV. Now this, if you don't know what BritBox is, BritBox is a collaborative approach with a number of channels, BBC, ITV, Channel 4 and 5, putting together all their content in one place, and then you subscribe, in the same way you would with Netflix or Amazon Prime. But ITV have been trying to really push accessibility, not just of their content and making their content available with AD, but also the accessibility of the app as well. Here's part of the conversation that our Alan Russell here at RNIB Connect Radio had with Jonathan Penny from ITV this week.
There are more than one broadcaster involved in this. We have been providing audio description content for BritBox over the last few months so that when the platform functionality was launched, we'd be able to have some of our ITV content ready. And yeah, basically, as you say, the AD has now started being rolled out on BritBox, and we're still working, myself in Access Services and with the technical and product teams as well, working with various stakeholders to increase the volume of the AD content, but also, really importantly, the breadth of the platforms that that content is available on. It's on mobile just now, but, you know, more is going to be added to that. A big part of that, as you say, is talking about the usability of the platforms in the same way that we have done with the ITV Hub, you know, making sure that not only is that content there, but it's signposted in a way that's accessible and playback and things like that. And that's all, they're all areas that, you know, we're still very much working closely with users to make sure that we get that right. But as of now, there's AD available in the Android and iOS versions of BritBox. There are AD categories within the sort of TV and film sections of the app. And there are programs like Midsummer Murders and A Touch of Frost for the sort of the classic programs, down to recent dramas like The Bay and Marcella as well.
That's Jonathan Penny from ITV. You can hear more of that conversation over on our RNIB Connect podcast. Sean Preece is with us this week. Now, Sean, you were someone who was, I think, quite critical of BritBox at the start because of its lack of ADs. Is this welcome news?
Of course it's welcome news, but again, it comes back to, why has it taken this long? Again, accessibility being thought about after the fact. I hate to be that sort of guy that says, yeah, well, where have you been? But I am. I'm exactly that sort of guy. Because I did sign up for BritBox when it first came out. And it just seems like every time a new service comes out, we're saying, oh, well, they're working on it. It will come. You know, are we still at that stage now? I mean, great. Yes, it's going to be accessible. But why wasn't it accessible when it was launched?
It's a chance. There's no point asking Robin Christofferson that question because he doesn't know what television is.
If I was going to subscribe to anything, it would be BritBox because it's got a ton of stuff on there from when I could see.
Yeah, so, it's got all the classics.
I'm really, like you say, you know, not into TV, but I feel passionate that, you know, say there's 25% of Disney Plus or Netflix's titles that are AD. That's how much of the fee we should pay, 25%, don't you think?
Well, that's the TV license argument, isn't it? Final word to Tim this week. I want to go back to that point that was asked, or that question that was asked earlier, from, I think Will asked the question, Clubhouse versus Discord. What's the difference, Tim?
Well, the big difference is that Clubhouse is all audio. So any kind of conversation, any kind of chat that's going on can either be private or public, one-to-one, or several to several thousand at a time having audio conversations. Discord, you can do that in, say, audio-type chat rooms, but there are also kind of, for lack of a better term, old-style message board or discussion board areas as well in Discord. So they do have both, but it's, I would say the Discord is not as robust as far as having an audio conversation as Clubhouse is, because it's just kind of a separate thing that it does. It's more the message board or discussion board, but that's the major difference between the two.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, we've all been, it's funny, I was reading so many tweets online from people a couple of weeks ago saying, don't touch Clubhouse, it's inaccessible, it's useless, blind people can't get in unless you get an invite, no one can get in without an invite, it's terrible. Now all I'm reading is, hey, come join my room, I'm talking about blindness, it's great, love this thing.
Well, with the last update, they've done a really good job making it very accessible. Is it 100%? Absolutely not.
No.
There's a couple of places where I think if they were to add some headings, you know, make it clear what you're doing and how to access things, keeping in mind what, you know, VoiceOver can do, it'd be better. But it's very close.
Yeah, it is getting there, that's for sure. Hey, listen, guys, that's it for our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Emails Andy. I bet you're so glad you hung around for this. You managed to get two words this
always.
Week.
Two pleasure words this week, always.
Was it? That's it for our show. Sean Preece, thank you for coming on. Robin, Tim, catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, bye.